A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to KSL Outdoors Radio. Thanks so much for starting your day with us on KSL. I'm excited to have Phil Tuttle back with us. He is an outreach manager, a regional outreach manager for the Division of Wildlife Resources. And we were going to talk about something that you and I experienced.
That's right.
And it happened to be in your family's backyard. Your dad still lives in Delta, right?
He's the last one there. He's supposed to lock the door when he leaves.
But we went down, gosh, I can't believe it was a decade ago.
I think it was, though.
It was a while, anyway, to be a part of the Delta Snow Goose Festival down there on Gunnison Bend Reservoir. And every time we do this story on the air, inevitably we get emails or phone calls from people that are upset because they didn't have it on their radar and they missed the opportunity. So, Phil, I'm sure you're the same, but you kind of have to go when Mother Nature goes on things like this. And these goose seem to have autopilot when it comes to passing through Utah.
Yep, they definitely do.
When is the event this year?
So this year we're holding our event in conjunction with the Delta Chamber of Commerce Snow Goose Festival, which is February 21st and 22nd. So that's a Friday and a Saturday. And we will kind of host a wildlife watching or viewing event in conjunction with that festival right at Gunnison Bend Reservoir. So we'll have some guys there, some biologists, and some people that answer questions, and we'll have some spotting scopes set up so that people can come and check it out and enjoy the geese. So,
yeah.
Awesome opportunity.
I know I ask this question every year, but we always wonder why Gunnison Bend Reservoir, with all the bodies of water that they have to choose from, things like the Great Salt Lake and Farmington Bay, when did they choose Gunnison Bend? Do we know?
You know, that's a really good question, Tim, that I don't have an answer for. I think as you know, as long as we've been, holding this event, they've obviously been there. And as far as I know, they've been there for quite a while, but I'm not sure exactly when they started. But it is an interesting thing that they choose there, and there's something about that area they really like. So
yeah, well, and it might
be good for us.
It might be the fact, and Russ and I actually witnessed this, that you've got lots of big fields around there that have tasty things to eat, and they can go do that midday and then get back on the water in the evening. That have something to do with it, maybe?
Yeah, that's definitely possible. That is a very, high agriculture area, so.
Yeah. Russ, we saw some things we didn't really expect to see. I mean, you see pictures of a big gathering of geese, and you say, okay.
Yeah.
But until you actually are there to feel it, not just see it.
Tremendous.
You don't know what to expect.
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling when you have, 30, 40,000 geese take off at the same time.
There's almost a change in atmosphere, isn't there?
Yes, you can feel the pressure.
Yeah. And the sound is really something, Phil.
Yeah, that's something else. I mean, it is really loud when they are, especially when they're all taking off all at once. Like you said, it really is breathtaking to hear that many geese all at once taking off. And not only, the sound of their wings, but, the honking is just, it's wild. And it's something I really struggle to explain it to somebody. It is something that you really just need to experience for yourself.
That's the sound of 40,000 geese saying, get out of my way, get out of my way, move, move, move.
Well, by the way, you don't want to be in the drop zone either. But I guess that happens too. Again, that's just part of nature. The timing of this, though, during the day is something that's important for people to know that want to really experience this, because if you go in the middle of the afternoon, chances are you're either going to see them just sitting in the fields or you're going to see them sitting on the water. But the show really begins when they arrive or when they take off. So walk us through the timing of the day.
Sure. I will throw out one disclaimer, Tim, that, you never know
True.
exactly when they're going to decide that, they are wild. And so You know, it's not clockwork. You know, what we've kind of seen is that, you know, kind of in the early morning, the geese will be in the fields feeding. And then sometime, you know, usually 9 to 10:30 a.m., they'll fly back to the reservoir. And again, that's an awesome time to be there. Lots of geese in flight, landing, you know, big. It's almost like geese tornadoes as they come, yeah, you know, swirling back down to the reservoir. And then usually they're on the reservoir most of the day until about, you know, between 4 and 6 p.m. right there in the evening. Then they really take off and head back to the fields. And that's my favorite time to be there, is to see them taking off in the evening. So 4 to 6 p.m. is probably my favorite time to be there.
It's called the Snow Goose Festival because there are a few tents usually set up out there, but there's a lot of passionate people that are there to share their knowledge with you. And so it's more than just having a spotting scope or having a set of binoculars and enjoying what's happening. You actually get to learn something along the way. And I believe some of the videos, at least the year we were out there, some of the videos they were showing were actually shot with past festivals.
Yep. Yeah, we usually have, you know, as I've been there in the past, I've shot some video, and, you know, we've got a tent there set up. People can come and ask the biologist questions, ask those that are there questions, and we'll have some footage of the geese taking off in case you can't be there for the evening. You know, we can kind of give you a little taste of everything there, so.
Well, and stopping to grab pizza or something in Delta's not a bad idea, I'm sure.
Not a bad idea.
This is actually a pretty big boom for the small town of Delta.
It's a good weekend for them. Yeah, you bet. You bet. And be sure to stop at the – it's now called the Red Rabbit Grill.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay. Had no idea.
Well,
people need to come prepared for the weather, however, which I think is the other important reminder here.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, it's just – definitely winter, so it can be cold. If you want to stick around and watch the geese, especially, you know, those best times in the morning or in the evening, it can be really chilly. You know, in the evening when the sun kind of goes down behind the hill, that's sort of when the birds like to take off. And man, it just, as soon as that sun disappears, it is really cold. So make sure you bring some warm, you know, some warm clothes, some layers, and then if you have your own binoculars or spotting scope to view the geese, that's helpful too. You know, you don't want to get too close, and so
I would say bring a good camera too with a good lens. Don't rely on that silly smartphone to take decent pictures.
Right.
Then you have to explain to people what they're actually looking at. But if you've got a good SLR camera with a good lens, you can get some amazing photos. And I'm speaking from experience here from our trip down. But here's the other thing: the other reason you want to see them in flight, not just to hear it and feel it, is that there's a whole different show that gets put on because these geese obviously are white, hence the name Snow Goose, but their wings are tipped black.
Right.
And so depending on which way that flock turns to make their moves, it's almost this choreographed show that is black for a moment and then it's white and then it's black for a moment and it's white. And is one of those wildlife viewing opportunities that we, I guess, take for granted here, but some people never see in their lifetime.
Oh, that's really well put, Tim. You know, it really is a unique experience, and there's just some amazing patterns that take place in the sky.
All right, so the dates are February 21st and 22nd, Gunnison Bend Reservoir. For those that don't know how to get there, you just head to Delta.
So many ways to get there, but the easiest is just south on I-15, get off in Nephi and cut across to Delta. Yeah, it's easy to follow it on the map, and there's plenty of signs, plenty of gas stations, plenty of facilities, but it is about 125 miles.
Yeah.
You can start out early and do it in one day if you want, or book ahead and get a room there in Delta.
Phil, that's the other thing, is after you clear Delta, there's good signage on the road that will guide people into where they can gather for the viewing opportunity.
There is, and the reservoir just kind of sits there just straight west of Delta. It's really close to Delta. So,
yeah. All right, Phil Tuttle, always great catching up with you. Thanks for joining us on the show this morning.
Appreciate it, Tim.
All right.
And we will reconnect with Navidomskis coming up here in just a minute. He promised to give us some fish bites, and as he likes to say, he wants to search back through the annals of his life. And last week he talked Colorado. I think this week he wants to go to the big sky.
That's right.
And talk a little Montana. We'll try and twist his arm into telling us what's happening with Utah fisheries. When we come back, Fish Bites is coming up next.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Bubba had a dream, Bubba had a wish to find himself a woman that loved the fish.
Yeah, it's Bubba.
One day at the tackle shop, his dream came true, and now for everyone he catches,
she catches too.
Hey, Bubba! She fishes better than you.
All right, we wanted...
You know what, Tim? I couldn't hear the music, and only hearing Russ was terrible.
Well, come on now. You could have sung along with me.
I didn't know where the song was. I couldn't hear the song. I just could hear you saying, hey, yeah. Bubba.
Yeah, and we need to have whatever's ailing him over there checked, because he sounds like he's in a whole lot of pain.
I was doing cow calls.
Yeah. You wanted to give us a little refresher course on some reports from the rivers, I think.
You know, my son always, when he gets me alone, he goes, Dad, tell me about another river. I go, what, you want to float? Dad, we want to float another river. Tell me one that nobody knows about. And I think back in the annals of my life and tell them about one, and they get all excited and they go. So last week, Russ was coming through Colorado, and he goes, yeah, you know, I was there on the Eagle River. Tell me about that. And, of course, it's the whole Colorado drainage, and I gave him all those rivers, and that's a whole lot of fun. And, look, I thought, why don't we talk about other rivers we know we have in Utah? I talk about them all the time. Well, let's go to Montana, because really it is the fly fishing capital of the world. And I heard somebody tell me that the fly fishing industry in Montana is bigger than the cattle industry as far as economics to the state. So they don't mind that we come up there, and I know you're planning some summer trips.
Yep.
So you've got to get to Montana. Let me go through a list, okay?
Yep.
You got the Big Hole, the Big Horn, the Clark's Fork, the Rock Creek, Missouri, Gallatin, Bitterroot, Madison, Beaverhead, Smith River, Yellowstone River, Jefferson, Blackfoot. And by the way, that's the little Blackfoot, because that's the McLean from the river runs through it. Mm-hmm. The Ruby and the Flathead. Of course, you got the North, South, and Middle Forks of the Flathead and the Kootenai. Those are the ones that come to mind. Those are all amazing. On that list, the only one I haven't fished is the Bitterroot. Mm-hmm. I need to get there. But you can ask me specifically about each one of these, and they're all amazing, and they're all acclaimed, and they all should be destinations for everybody. It's so epic in Montana. They just have a lot of rivers. And because of where they are climatically, as far as latitudinally, they don't need altitude to make their temperatures conducive to fit trout. Just because of the latitude of where Montana is in our country, trout is their mainstay fish. And so if you're a fly fisherman, you know that I love all fishing, don't get me wrong. I can go to the Keys, I can fish salt, I can fish for any bass, love it. But when it comes right down to it, if I had to pick my favorite, it's a river. And Trout River. And so fishing a trout stream is as good as it gets. And honestly, Montana is the best it gets. I hate to give them all the credit because it ain't us, but it's true. And you got to get up there. And there's all those rivers. And I'll tell you specifically about any one of them. And lots of them I broadcasted from with the show, if you can recall. But those are the ones I put at the top of my list in no particular order. You can't go wrong with any of those I named.
I have a trivia question for you, Mike.
Go.
Where in Montana can you fish four rivers within just a few minutes of each other?
Well, it's easy. You just go to the Three Forks, or you go to Yellowstone, which is the headwaters of all the rivers. In fact, you can spit in one and throw a rock in the other, and they're going to go to two different oceans.
A lot of people do that too.
In fact, my son has what he calls the three river fish. He hooked it in the fire hole. the fish swam up not the Gallatin. What's the one? Begins with a G. Oh, my gosh, I'm getting old. And then it went downriver into the Madison. So there's a fish in three rivers. He calls it the three river fish, and I can't remember where the fire hole meets the Gibbon. So he hooked a nice brown, about 17. He caught it on a pattern called the Pepperoni, and I was walking with him, and he was worried, and it was fighting, and it went up the Gibbon to the bridge, and then it came back down and took off on the run. It got past us. I didn't net it right, and it went down into the Madison. So he had a three river fish.
There you go. Awesome.
So those four rivers.
Yeah. The four rivers you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, you're talking about we got the Jefferson, the Madison, the Gallatin.
And the Missouri. And
the what?
The Missouri.
Oh, yeah. The three become the Missouri.
Yeah.
There's also the three that come in that create the Jeff, is the Ruby, the Beaver Head, and the Big Hole.
Where does the Beaver Head meet the Jefferson?
The Beaver Head meets the Jefferson near a town called Twin Bridges.
Right? Twin Bridges. I know right where that's at.
Yeah, let me just get a little plug in here for some, local fishery.
Because
somebody was asking about strawberry, and unfortunately, I went to the Division of Wildlife Resources website. The most recent report is still 9 days old, but I think some of these things will remain in play, like staying in the 10 to 25-foot water column. That seems to be where they're catching their fish. And anytime we've gone up there with Paul, it's always a nice fly, and it's usually tipped with a little mealy worm.
Yep.
And,
same old deal.
You know, the mistake people make is they drill their holes a little too far from shore. You don't want to be in too deep of water, but 10 to 25 feet seems to be the way. And usually it's a green-colored ice fly with just a little mealy worm on the hook. And
I wouldn't worry much about it till you get up there to the marina.
Absolutely.
They'll take good care of you.
That's the best advice possible, is to stop by the Strawberry Bay Marina. By the way, the annals of his life, which, as he described it a minute ago, are some of the reasons why people love taking that fishing class.
Oh, yeah.
As long as you pronounce it right, it's the annals of his life, because nobody wants to hear the rest of it.
That's what somebody says who's had a fishing problem their whole life and didn't know what to do about it.
All right, I'm going to cut you loose so you can go ski.
Okay, thanks, guys. I'll see you next week.
All right, buddy.
All right, buddy. Now, Don's going to call. I was thinking through the annals of my life. I needed some soap opera music like The Young and the Restless behind that.
He mentioned Twin Bridges.
Yeah.
Have you been through Twin Bridges?
No.
Next time we're on the bikes up there in Montana, West Yellowstone, that stuff. It's a beautiful little town.
Yeah. All right.
I enjoyed it.
Trying to remember that. We need to break. ABC News is coming up at the top of the hour. Plenty to talk about there. So we'll be back with our second and final hour coming right up.
You can't go wrong. He's a little cousin.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.